This episode of the Interho Uprising is also available for your viewing pleasures on YouTube. Hello, YouTube. If looking at people while they're podcasting is your thing, then you can click the YouTube link in our show notes and gaze along as we talk our shit. Also, this episode of the Interho Uprising is sponsored by you. That's right. You. All of your Patreon donations, PayPal donations, 5-star reviews on Apple and Stitcher, shoutouts on social media, articles, mentions to your friends, IHU merchandise purchases.
This is too much.
All make this show possible week in and week out. And for that, we thank you, homies. Welcome to the Interho Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, pansexual, feminist ho who lives in New York City, whose pronouns are she and her, and who is social distancing.
And we love to see it because you need to fucking do it. And me, Rob, one pansexual, agender feminist with a fatty whose pronouns are they, them, and fire daddy.
Is that because you play in fire?
That is because I'm a firefighter.
Just letting people know. Fire daddy.
Niggas is fire.
Are you Prince Zuko? Oh, we took that two different directions. Anyway, every episode of the Interho Uprising works like this. Myself and my lovely rotating co-hosts talk about sex, love, and dating as it pertains to current events in the world, our lives, and yours. And sometimes we go on deep dives into particular topics like we do in this here episode. Today we're talking about romance and love addiction. And occasionally we hit you with interviews from insightful folks. To go a little bit more into today's episode, we are talking about romance addictions. Do you have one? What is the science behind that bullshit and how to deal with it? Plus, we're going to do a review of the new Netflix film that puts white heteronormative rom-coms to shame, healing from trauma whilst understanding hypersexuality, and the cutest black feminist virtual date in the history of all virtual dates. It was very cute.
If you would like to follow along with the conversation had in this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag InterhoUprising so we can see it and the hashtag PodIn so other people could see it. If you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at InterhoUprising without the G on Twitter, InterhoUprising on Instagram and Facebook. You could join our Facebook group by searching InterhoUprising Community, that's CUMMUNITY, and you can head to InterhoUprising.com to sign up for weekly goodies via our newsletter, pay a ho, or check out merch.
And if you want to pay us to speak virtually at your school or conference about sex positivity, black feminism, podcasting, or the other kinds of topics that we discuss on this here show, or if you would like us to host a consent, pleasure, or dating virtual workshop for your organization, we would love to do that as well. So to book us, you can send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com. We're going to start it up with a little segment that we like to call Ho of the Week. Ho of the Week is where we shout out the homies who have supported IHU in the past week. Hoes of the Week get special nicknames, and the game, if they choose to participate, is to guess the meaning behind their nicknames. So this week we got Dontre H, aka Montre, who became a patron. And oh man, it's such a silly reason, Montre.
I hope you try. Because I don't get it, and I really want to know, and I can't wait for us to stop recording so I could find out.
So silly. Anyway, shout out to Char Mizzy, whose real name is Charmaine, who upped their pledge on Patreon. Shout out to you. GL, aka Get Light, for becoming a patron. Get your light feet going. The light. Yeah, I really like that one. Shout out to Ariana S, aka Ariana Randy, who became a patron. Shout out to Nikita M, aka La Fan Nikita, who paid us on PayPal and left us a lovely note. Shout out to Kojo, aka Conathan Co-Star, who left a really nice Apple Podcast review. And shout out to Roxanne, aka Roxanne's Revenge, who also left a very nice and insightful podcast review on Apple. Rob, you really liked Conathan Co-Star.
I'm a fucking nerd.
If you would like to be a Ho of the Week and get a cool nickname, here are some things that you can do. You can leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. You can shout us out in an article you've written, or you can shout us out on social media. These are some non-monetary ways you can support us. We love monetary and non-monetary support, and we understand that in these uncertain times, monetary support is not feasible for many folks, so please do not spend your bottom dollar on us. But if you can spare some change, you can donate to us on PayPal at paypal.me/innerho. You can become a patron on Patreon at patreon.com/innerhouprising. Or you can purchase some merchandise at innerhouprising.com/merchandise, the links to which are in the show notes. Also, reminder that if you become a patron on Patreon for $2 a month, you can participate in things like our Slack chat, our patron-only film nights, and for $5 a month, you can join our Monday night Zoom hangouts. Got some events coming up.
Yes, we do.
And I think you should come virtually and then come in your genitals. What? Anyway. The 200th episode party. Your fave hoes are soon approaching 200 episodes in the books. And to celebrate, we're throwing a Zoom party open to all of our patrons to kick it, reminisce on old episodes, laugh, dance, sing, whatever. Have a good time with us. The hangout will be Wednesday, June 3rd, 2020 at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. That's the night that our 200th episode drops. And we'll post a link to the Zoom hangout a few days prior to the event on Patreon. We hope that you can all come and celebrate with us. What are you looking forward to for the 200th episode, Rob?
I'm looking forward to just looking back on how much we've grown. We've grown so fucking much.
That's very true.
Even just like, not just like the things that we say and we talk about, just like our own personal selves. We've evolved into some fucking amazing people. Not that we weren't amazing before, but I mean, fuck.
Amazing-er is the word.
Yeah. Bitch.
There's that. You can celebrate that with us. Also coming up, we have Akua's solo sex workshop. Has social distancing and self-isolation placed your partnered sex life in a momatorium? Are you interested in discovering alternate ways to experience pleasure and maintain a healthy sex life during these trying times? Well, this Friday, you can join our favorite mental health therapist, Bald Baddie Akua, for a patrons-only Zoom workshop about masturbation. The workshop will cover the basics of solo sex from start to finish, including ideas for solo foreplay and tips and techniques to rock your world. That will be on Zoom as well on Friday, May 22nd at 7 p.m. Eastern. We'll post a link to the Zoom session on our Patreon the Thursday before the workshop. Also, shout out to the non-patrons. Like, those were two events for patrons, but we want the non-patrons to sit tight and keep in mind that we'll be doing all kinds of virtual events open to the public for as long as the pandemic lasts, and we want you to stay tuned for more because we'll be announcing those on the show and our social medias. One last shout out before we get into this real juicy topic that Rob is going to get into, but I want you all to know that Akua, the aforementioned co-host, was recently featured on our friends over at the Miss Vixen podcast. Miss Vixen is your destination for lit womanist perspectives on pop culture, politics, media, and other incisive conversation usually stolen from us from the mainstream to profit off of. Akua and Miss Vixen host Queen spoke all about sex, therapy, and raising a sex-positive child, and the link to that episode will be in the show notes. Now, without further ado, we're going to get into a little segment that we like to call Fuck It. It is our topic of the day, and Rob is going to tell us about Mine as Well, Face It, You're Addicted to Love, which is what I wanted to name the episode. And then Rob was like, no. And I was like, joke's on you, because I'm still going to name it.
You can do the segment,
but I'm going to name it. Do
what you want, Sam. It don't hurt.
What's going on?
So I'll be talking about romance and love addiction. So what inspired this episode was my best friend, right? We were having a very serious WhatsApp conversation because, you know, you can't see niggas now. And he asked me, do you think that you're addicted to sex? And I'm like, nah, I've went months without sex. And I wasn't like furiously masturbating. I don't think that that qualifies for sexual addiction. And he's like, well, what about romance and love? And I was like, is that possible?
You got me there.
I never heard of that, like a romance addiction, a love addiction, like being addicted to a a feeling. I wanted to actually research it and see if there was real scientific basis for it, and also enlighten everybody that it's actually a thing that does exist, and it's actually a thing that you can, you know, cope with, treat, deep dive into with your therapist or whatever. Mm. So that's why we're here.
That's important to know.
Yeah. So romance and love addictions may look different for everybody. Like, you may not be looking for a serious relationship, but like casual partners who make you feel romance. Like when you were dating initially, like you were like, oh, I don't want to be in a serious relationship, but I do want people to date and to have fun with, mm-hmm. you know, without that mm-hmm. Monogamy experience. It's healthy to do either. There's nothing wrong with either of those things. And for millennia, our ancestors have been doing the same, keeping our species alive and thriving. But it is unhealthy, and it may be addictive when it consumes your life. And a breakup is often followed by like intense feelings of rage, anxiety, and depression. Which does happen when you have any kind of breakup, usually.
Yeah, I'm curious about intense. Like, it seems like emphasis is on the intense.
Yes, but we'll get into that. From the article, Intense, Passionate, Romantic Love, A Natural Addiction, How the Fields Investigate Romance and Substance Abuse Can Inform Each Other. It's a study on romantic addiction, and seriously, it's a really, really good read. It's an easy read, too, as far as studies go. So you should definitely get into it.
What journal was it in? Or how did you access it?
Google Scholars.
Nice.
I just went on Google Scholar hoping that an article was free, because Google Scholar be fucking giving you like a tidbit.
When you're poor and a nerd.
It's like, I just want to learn. But this one happened to be free. So here's some tidbits from that. The authors propose that romantic love is a natural addiction that evolved from some of our mammalian ancestors. Romantic love may have started as far back as 4.4 million years ago. Wow, it's a fucking long time. Like,
it's a long time to be loving. Like, oh my God. Was there anything worth loving back then?
No, there wasn't until niggas came along.
Imagine, like, you get cheated on after a long day of gathering nuts. Like, I'm tired, and then you cheated on me.
Can you stop?
No. Sorry.
But our hominin ancestors, which are the closest you get to humans before humans, they were, I mean, I wouldn't say monogamous. Like, how the fuck are you going to know if they're monogamous or not? But research suggests that two partners became attached, and it allowed them to focus their mating time on each other and rear young together, as opposed to one male partner, like, having sex with tons of women and then them rearing the young by themselves, which happens mm-hmm. a lot with other animals. And romantic love, for that reason, could be considered a part of evolution because you're bonded to that person for life. But lovers with an addiction, they may relapse like drug addicts do. Long after the relationship is over, specific cues like people, places, or events, songs that are associated with a past lover may trigger memories. This initiates the renewed craving, obsessive thinking, which leads to compulsive texting or phone calls or showing up in hopes that the romance may be rekindled despite the likely negative consequences and renewed rejection. So that's where the intense feelings come along. But even then, that still might happen in a normal breakup. But it's the constant cycle of it that becomes unhealthy.
When you say long after, what is long after?
Well, they didn't give a specific time, but if I can speak from experience, I would have those feelings for maybe up to a year, year and a half of like having a cue, and that cue still reminding me of that person so much that I'm like texting my friends like, tell me not to call this nigga, because I'm about to call this nigga, you know?
So that also has to do with how long the relationship was, too. So, like, if you only dated someone for a month and a year later, you're like,
yeah,
that might be a sign of, like...
Like, OD. Okay. If you dated somebody for 6 months, which isn't even out of, like, the honeymoon stage, and you have those intense, extreme feelings, like, that may indicate that there might be something different going on.
I see, okay.
But... a lot of behaviors that romance addicts experience with the current partner are truly compulsive, such as compulsively following your partner, incessantly calling or texting. By incessantly, I mean like nonstop, or unexpectedly appearing at like their workplace or appearing at a function that they're at. This is an effort to be with their beloved day and night, even if it's not physical. So even if I can't physically be with you, I'm going to text you because I want to know where you are. I want to know what you're doing. I want to know who you with. And you got to always remember, at a certain point, it's not that bad in the beginning, except like randomly showing up and shit. But also it depends on who your partner is and what they are comfortable with. That might not be like the worst thing for them, because that personally wasn't the worst thing for me. But it's when it's a problem for you and your partner. Like, you are calling me too much. You are texting me too much.
When you're breaking boundaries.
Exactly.
It also sounds like a stalker.
Yes, behavior. It is stalkerish. So dopamine, along with oxytocin, adrenaline, serotonin, all these tonins and lins that we talk about a lot on the show, and various endorphins play a vital role in ignoring red flags in the hopes to find a partner. Mm. This neurochemical reaction, it matches the same reactions found in those who abuse drugs or have a sexual addiction. So it would not be improper to say that new romance can be just as addictive as sex or cocaine, because it basically lights up in CAT scans and MRIs. Those same regions constantly light up when you have a new love.
Or budding
brands, yeah, but also you just sniff some good ass coke. Not that I would know what that's like. So things that are bothersome to you, like would typically like piss you off, they're ignored because this person seems like this endless book that you just want to keep reading. And tell me not. And you like, seriously, tell me not. After you and them are done.
Yeah. That's why I said yeah so firmly. That wasn't like a that was like a no.
Because you know you're ignoring that shit. And like, you know when you're done, don't you see like the red flags that you saw in the very beginning were ultimately the reason why you guys didn't really work out? But you're like, but I ignored them. I could have avoided this whole thing if I would have just said that that was not okay or whatever. That bothered me too much.
The brain do be braining, though.
The brain do be fucking braining, and you can't really help what the brain be doing. So love and romance addicts are not necessarily hooked on love and romance. It's not. Love and romance are not tangible things, but it's the limerence stage. So you introduced limerence in season 5, episode 39, Hot Human Summer, when we were all like, what the fuck is limerence?
That episode changed lives.
It did. A lot of people's, including mine.
Can you re-explain what that is for people who did not listen to episode
39? Limerence is the neurochemical rush of new romances. So limerence can be a catalyst to a long-term healthy relationship because it's so brief and it could lead to forming strong bonds. However, those afflicted with addiction try to prolong the stage, try to get back the original early excitement. That is the first high, when you are infatuated with each other, when all you want to do is be around each other and talk to each other. But that's something that fades. And it's okay to fade.
And it always does.
Limerence is like synonymous with the honeymoon stage. And that's from 1 to 6 to 8 months.
The cupcake phase.
And it's like a lot of couples, if they really find out they're not vibing with each other, they break up within that time frame. And then some couples make it past and they still break up. But either way, it's like the honeymoon stage is that beginning rush of all of these chemicals that, you know, you can't stop it. Like, you can stop it, but it would be changing the way that you think completely. But it's okay. Like, limerence feels good as fuck.
It does.
But that's the thing. It feels so good that it can be addictive, that you want to feel it over and over again, or you want to prolong it for as long as you possibly can. And you might prolong it for yourself, but you might not be prolonging it for your partner. So with diagnosis, so the DSM-5, which is the latest DSM.
It's a book used to diagnose mental disorders.
Yes. It has 11 criteria for substance abuse, where only 2 must be present for a diagnosis. The website rehabs.com, it actually just focused on 3 indicators, and it seemed like they just kind of inserted the word like love and romance in lieu of substances, and it works just fine. So one diagnosis, one criteria rather, was for 6 months or more, love addicts are preoccupied to the point of obsession with new relationships, ongoing relations, romantic fantasies of the like. The other one is love addicts have lost control over their romantic fantasies and relationships. More often, this loss of control is evidenced by failed attempts to quit or at least curtail their obsessive search for love. And lastly, love addicts, like other addicts, experience the negative life consequences that are directly and indirectly related to their obsessive behavior. So romance addicts struggle to find or maintain romantic and sexual intensity. And once the intensity fades, they search for a new relationship. They rely on these kinds of relationships to escape stress, mental illness, or unresolved trauma, which are the things that people use alcohol, drugs, and sex for. And they can feel alone when not engaged in relationships. But when they are in one, they may feel smothered. So it's a very conflicting cycle.
Why is it that they feel smothered when they are in one?
I think it's because they don't really want to be in one. It's more of the rush of chemicals. But then if you are in a relationship, then you're expected to also do relationship things.
Ah, smothered by the responsibilities of being in a relationship and not just the funness.
Yes, because the funness goes away after a fucking while. It really does. That shit is work. Relationships always work. And they can confuse romantic and sexual intensity with long-term or true emotional intimacy. An example of that would be somebody that you had sex with. You may have had like a really good time. You may have felt like a really personal connection and they felt it was still kind of casual, but you treat it as, oh, you must really fucking like me. And you begin to try to, you maneuver your way into their life so you're a more consistent partner and they're not with the shits. That happens a lot when I get ghosted.
Say more.
There was a guy who, I was breaking social distances. I'm a stupid ass bitch. But he came over. I brought him dinner. We watched. He helped me dye my hair. We had like such like intimate moments. After my grandmother died. So he's like, oh, anything you need help with, like, I'll help you. I'm like, oh, that's so sweet. Eventually, we did have sex. It wasn't like passionate or whatever. Like, I don't even remember it that much. I know that there were points where we would talk through it. And we would do the pillow talking thing. And he opened up to me like way more than I thought that he would. Then we showered together the next day. I made him breakfast while he sat on the couch, motherfucker. And I dropped him home and I never saw him again. I barely ever heard from him again. I think that he may have muted my stories so he didn't have to watch them anymore because he stopped watching all of my stories. And I know that's not like, that might sound like crazy, but you know, when you click your stories, you see the people who watch them the most. And he was one of them because he was always in my fucking DMs. And then suddenly he wasn't there at all. And I think that he might have felt that I was trying to push the encounter into something more consistent. And instead of communicating, because I said that when he was here and he didn't say anything else, but instead of communicating that he was, like, he had fun, but he didn't think that he wanted it to be consistent. He just kind of disappeared.
So you said that you wanted it to be consistent?
I said that I was looking for, I wasn't looking for a serious relationship or relationship really as far as terms go. I just wanted to date people and have fun. And, you know, whatever happens, happens. Like, I don't want to be in a serious relationship, though. Like, that is an absolute no-no. But I didn't want it to be like a one-night stand kind of thing. So I did communicate that. He still done my shit. He ghosted me. And even though we only had sex one time, I was heartbroken. You know, you could feel how you feel, but I didn't feel like it was worth being heartbroken because I didn't really know him like that. And we just had like a moment that was fun, but it wasn't like this incredible love scene. And that's when my friend introduced that theory. Like, do you think that you just might be addicted to fucking romance because you are wowing right now because you do this way too much?
Well, I don't know the extent of your heartbrokenness. So maybe like, let me preface with that. But like, I've been very upset at people for less. Like, I've been upset at people who I thought that I was bonding with who I never even met. And like upset for like at least a month about it. Like, oh, I've been talking to you for 2 weeks. I'm upset for a month. So I think like what makes me upset about those instances is like being disappointed at the possibility of it all. mm-hmm. and like the I'm having funness being cut yeah. short.
And it's like, but there was still time to continue having fun.
Yeah. So I don't know. On that level, that makes me feel like I don't think that that's a abnormal behavior, just judging for myself, because I don't think that I have a love or romance addiction. But maybe the level of heartbreak and then also the fact that it happens often.
Yes.
Might be the qualifying yes. thing there.
The thing is, the actual addiction of it almost always stems from trauma. Mm. So that's being neglected or abandoned, sexual abuse, including like covert incest, as well as other traumas from early life. So I think it's really the culmination of all of these things that gives it the addictive behavior, not just the one or two things, because everybody can identify with some level of this, but I don't know many people who can identify with every facet of this.
Mm-hmm.
So for a serious love or romantic addiction, of course, you know, it can be treated like any other addiction. So that's inpatient, outpatient, or STEP programs. Another way for those of us who identify with a lot of these factors is we can change the way we think. Mm-hmm. And I know changing the way you think, like, it literally sounds so much easier in theory than in practice, but it always takes work to change something that you actually want to change. You got to want to change it, and then you can change it. You can do whatever you want, and that's true.
Yeah.
For most of us, when we have sex with someone that we like, we form an adult attachment bond. And it's similar to the ones that we had as an infant with our parents. So that's like the kissing and the cooing, the rocking, the holding, and the things that made us feel safe as like little nicklets. So
what about white people? Wigglets?
Oh, that's you calling me bald. That's so funny. I feel like I shouldn't like laugh as hard as I do at the thing you say, but that's so funny. So little nicklets or wigglets. The more you have sex with this partner, you may begin to feel like a separation anxiety, even if you are the cause of the separation. Like if you have to go to work or you have to go away, you are the person who is actually causing the separation, but you still feel that extreme separation anxiety. And when the attachment is broken, like you break up, you feel grief similar to losing a loved one, even if you had no intention on actually dating this person for real.
Mm.
And, you know, that, as I said, it's a culmination because that does happen. Mm-hmm. Like when you didn't really have an intention, like you didn't even like the person sometimes, but just the fact that, you know, it happened, you had sex and you did have this attachment. It's not on no Hotep shit. Like, yeah, you know, when you have sex, you know, you transform.
Soul ties.
But seriously, you do, like, it's not every time you have sex and it's not with everybody that you have sex with, but with certain people that you do have sex with, especially when you have sex and you stay the night or you cuddle afterwards, you begin to form an attachment bond. And then, and the separation anxiety, I think it could just be simple as really missing somebody. Mm. And it's like, what are you even missing? Because you don't really know this person like that. So it's like,
or they're not a great person, dude.
Yes.
Or
but
general.
But you still miss them for no fucking reason. Mm. So when you break that bond, either they ghost you or you decide that you don't want to deal with them anymore or whatever, you feel this like grief, like you someone that you love died.
Mm.
That's extreme.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say if you find a partner, just for like experiments, because we don't really know what the fuck is going on. So if you do find a partner that you think shit might be lit with, see what happens past the limerence stage. Are you bothered by this person? Does this person make you feel uncomfortable? Does this person hurt you? You see if you can, like, if this person isn't, if you don't feel those things, you feel kind of good. You have to see through your own idealism of perfection, of what a perfect relationship is supposed to look like, because there is no perfect relationship. And you go through the power struggles of a relationship, because that it just happens. You don't really dive into a relationship and everything is just picture perfect. You struggle with, I don't like when you eat all the fucking yogurt because you don't even buy the fucking yogurt. You never buy the yogurt. Shit like that, you know? That has literally been a conversation. Like, this nigga's eating my fucking yogurt and he never buys a fucking yogurt. but you want to buy other shit that I don't like, whatever.
How inconsiderate.
Yeah, niggas be wildin'. But, you know, you have to see if that is a boundary for you, if that's a red flag for you, and then you know, you just work on it. If it's worth it, it's worth it. If it's not, it's not. And you have to see yourself objectively from the outside looking in and taking responsibility for your own emotional baggage. Because if you do feel like a lot of these things apply to you, you know that you got some emotional fucking baggage. But you have to take responsibility and not put, oh, I'm like this because of this.
So let me continue to be this.
Exactly. Things that happen to you, they might create the persona that you have, but they are not who you are. They're not all you are. You are a person separate from your experiences. So you can control how you react to situations if you want to.
Hashtag you are not your trauma.
Oh, yes, bitch. You have to see yourself objectively and communicate in truthful and honest ways and maintain a level of respect inside the relationship on both ends. Just because you're used to people, you know, being extremely disrespectful to you, abusive to you, doesn't mean that you up the ante. And it's like you are proactive instead of reactive. It's like, I'm going to wild out on you, so you wouldn't even get the, you wouldn't even get the chance, nigga. You got to maintain a good amount of respect. And in time, you may become more flexible in accepting who you are and you and your partner's limitations. And even if it doesn't work out, it's more of a lesson than just the grief that you're constantly experiencing. You learned, okay, this is what I like. This is what I don't like. And I think I can leave this relationship without falling apart, which is like a good feeling to like cut some nigga off and be like, bye.
Yeah.
Instead of like wondering, I wonder what he's doing. I wonder how he's doing. Like, I wonder if he thinks about me, because that's the thoughts that be running through niggas' heads. For niggas who, what is that, taking up real estate in your head?
Yeah.
For niggas who are not paying, because they don't give a fuck. More scientifically speaking, self-expansion may help with these addictive behaviors. So any novelty activity that activates the dopamine system and facilitates energy and optimism is creating a safe replacement reward. In psychology, like somebody who likes to do something that is considered morally wrong, so they replace it with doing something that it's the same thing, but it's acceptable. So somebody who likes to, who's very interested in dismembering people, becomes a surgeon. Somebody who's very interested, like too interested in dead bodies, becomes like a mortician or the people who be doing autopsies and shit.
Mm-hmm. It's the Dexter theory, but not because he was actually killing people. He only does it to people who are morally reprehensible. That's still bullshit.
Exactly, because you out here killing niggas and shit still.
But great show.
So it's similar to that, except to the less extreme area.
to not morally reprehensible things, but things that are harmful to you.
Yes. but like the thing about those is that they get the same rush that they would feel if they were be doing it immorally. The self-expansion would be do an activity that would give you that same feeling, but it's a positive activity.
Right.
So this is more like rewiring the brain system. So your brain is plastic. And by that, I mean, it can form new connections all the time. So like a person who loses their dominant hand, say their right hand, they lose it, it gets chopped off and they can't put it back. They can't use it. Through physical therapy, they can form new connections in their brain and they can make their only hand, their left hand, the dominant one, and they can use it just like the one that they lost. You know, it doesn't just happen. You have to practice it. The brain doesn't stop changing unless you let it stop changing. You can always form new neural connections. No, you can't get more neurons, but you can form new connections. And we love neural connections.
That's amazing.
So if love and romance are connected to the reward systems in your brain, you have to create new neural connections to these reward systems to re-navigate how dopamine is released inside of your body. So some people try to stop dating entirely, going cold turkey, but without using the neuroplasticity, the behaviors are still there and relapsing is highly likely. Just like with stopping when you quit smoking cigarettes. Most people relapse. There was no substitute for smoking, so they just went back to smoking. my own personal theory, because, you know, I do got a degree in human biology and psychology and all that. But this is something that I've been thinking about for a long time, and I've been practicing, and it feels like it does work a little bit, like, you know, but it takes time. So my own personal theory is to do this with songs. So my ex and I, we used to make playlists for each other. We were doing that from during our limerence stage. And a lot of the songs in the playlist triggered a lot of emotions that I did not want to feel. Instead, I combined both of our playlists, like all of our playlists. I renamed it to just love songs. We used to have pictures of each other on as a playlist. I just put a picture of a really pretty flower. And I listen to it when I'm doing anything like romantic or sexy to me. If that's just like dancing, if I'm doing something with for my OnlyFans, that's the playlist that I have in the background. Or if I'm doing anything sex worker related in real life, I'll have that playlist playing. Or if I'm just like cooking or cleaning or just forming the connection past my ex to something, just doing things that I enjoy. And that helped me disassociate him from songs. Yeah. So I'm not as triggered. If a song comes on, I'm not like, oh, wow, my ex sent that song to me. Oh, my God. Like, it's just a song.
You're like, oh, I twerked to that on OnlyFans.
And yes, and they new loved memories. It. And they tapped me, bitch. Yes.
It's a good neural connection to me?
Yes, it is. But it's a connection that you have to, like, force.
Actively do.
Yes, you can't expect it to happen. It's something that you really have to put work into do. So also, like, activities that you did with a partner that when you think about, you always associate with them. Try it with a group of friends that you truly love and form a new memory to that activity that involves healthy love. Deleting numbers, it helps curve the cue of seeing their name. So now you don't have a trigger on your phone constantly. And these are similar to the things that Rebecca spoke about in her breakup episode.
That was... Breakups, why they suck, and how to cope according to science. I'll put that in the show notes for this episode, along with the limerence episode.
Yes, yes. Mad other episodes that help with this episode. Also, slowly deleting pictures. I have a lot of pictures with a lot of niggas.
Oh, man, that's actually a good episode title.
Removing gifts from your place of residence or your workplace that somebody that you don't want to think about is giving you. Doing activities that you used to reserve for a lover. I mean, you do that with loved ones who are not romantic. But it all truly helps form new connections in your brain associated less with romance, and you still get the dopamine rush you love, but in a safer way. It minimizes the rejection fallout that causes the compulsive behaviors, because not only are you providing yourself a distraction, you're rewiring yourself to be less addicted and more in control. And remember, it's truly a process. It doesn't happen overnight. You may relapse a couple times before you get it right. It may take months, it may take years to truly feel free of the compulsion to be with someone, but be patient with yourself.
Nice. How did you feel putting all that together?
I was very intrigued, because I'm like, wow, this is really, like, think about it. I think we spoke about this one day after recording, and we couldn't really pinpoint a time where I was actually like single. I've always been either in a serious relationship or dealing with somebody,
yeah,
in a way that it could have ended up being a relationship.
Okay.
Or not. I thought it could have been and they didn't think so, or whatever. I've been like that since I was about 19 years old. I've always been involved with somebody. So, like, really seeing that, I already had an idea of doing all of these things because, you know, I'd known neuroplasticity really does help, but it helped me become patient with myself and, like, really understand, like, okay, like, I do have wild childhood trauma. I have a lot of rejection trauma from childhood. So I can see why I can try to keep somebody in that limerence stage forever, but it's not okay. It's not safe to keep trying to do that. And it's also just not possible.
Right.
It's an unrealistic expectation that you have.
Yeah. I'm glad doing this episode allowed you to be more gentle with yourself. I do want to say, and this is like something for a different episode, but I do want to say that there's like space for a conversation where it's like, just because you're out of the limerence stage doesn't mean that the two people in the relationship should stop trying to do sweet things for each other. And I think that's something that people might, like there's kind of like a tangled territory here where it's like one person might not be doing that because they don't feel it anymore. But if you do plan to be in a long-term relationship with someone, then that is actually a behavior that should remain consistent. So that's worth evaluating. Well, thank you very much for that, Rob. I love when we get all science-y on this podcast. If anybody has any responses to what Rob said, or if you just discovered that you might have a romance addiction that you need to talk with a mental professional about, because we are not diagnosing show, tell us about your experiences and things like that, because that would be a really interesting conversation to continue. Also, if you have ideas for episodes that are rooted in science or deep dives or anything like that, we're kind of trying to play with the format of this show. So definitely tell us what is pressing, what you want to hear the hoes talk about. That's a party on the weekend. That's a party on the weekend. She loves a party on the weekend. She loves a party on the weekend. We're going to move on now to our segment called Fuck Me, which is our segment about our sexual, romantic, and dating lives. And within that segment is a mini segment called Sam Presents Ass Media, which is a play on the term mass media.
I like how you extremely emphasize ass. Like, you kind of yelled it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Thank you.
I love you.
I'm glad. I love you too. I'm taking a break from sharing about my personal life, which is typically what this segment is for, while I deal with some things on my end. But in the interim, I'm not going to stop talking because this is a podcast and niggas got to host it. So instead, I'll be giving book, TV, podcast, film, all things media reviews that relate to sex, love, dating, and or gender. And most of the time, they're spoiler-free reviews. So this week, the review is on a movie called The Half of It. Have you ever heard of it?
I have not.
So this movie is on Netflix. It debuted maybe like 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I saw a little bit about it, and then it kind of just petered out. So I think it's a good movie for people to watch, so I definitely wanted to like boost it on this podcast. So the synopsis that they give on Google, and maybe even Netflix itself, is a shy, introverted student helps the school jock woo a girl whom secretly they both want. So I put this on, it was one of the options for our Netflix watch parties for patrons to vote on, and nobody voted on it. And I think it's because the synopsis doesn't do it justice, but the synopsis is trying to do what the movie itself did. So now I'm going to give you my own synopsis. Oh yeah, it sounds like a typically oppressive, heteronormative, toxic, romantic love story that nobody wants to watch anymore because the heyday for those are over. So here's my synopsis. The story revolves around a 17-year-old Chinese-American friendless writer who lives in a very white American town and is queer but not out. Her white male classmate and her fall for the same Latina queen bee of the school, and all the people involved learn and grow along the way about themselves. So I think it was a really, really well done film. And yeah, I would actually suggest that everyone watches it. I'm still up to doing a Netflix party on it. One thing I really enjoyed was the opening montage. I won't spoil too much, but it's the first thing that happens in the film. It's an artistic, I think it's like stop motion animation that is happening while the main character is narrating, and they're narrating the myth of soulmates, and that the Greek, or maybe it's Roman, myth of soulmates is that people were together as two people in one body or in one soul, and then when they came down to earth, they got separated, and you need to find your other half to be whole. And then at the end, because the main character is a writer, they're like, yeah, but that's all bullshit anyway. And a different kind of film could have took it and been like, oh yeah, it's not actually bullshit, I found my soulmate. But that's like not what this movie is about at all. And that's so good that kind of media is being made, because all of the early 2000s were like these same rom-coms, and they're not healthy. They're not healthy depictions of like romantic love, but even more so self-love. So the film claims that it's not a love story, and it holds to that. And it has strong messages about self-actualization, self-growth, and self-love, and love in general, which I think you need self-love in order to feel love with other people. Maybe that's not true. Debatable. I think it enhances it. I think it enhances it.
Yeah, it can do that because you value yourself more if you have self-love.
Exactly. So, like, for example, like, if you love yourself, you're willing to put up boundaries with the people that you love, which is better for the relationship with yourself, themselves, and the two of you. So, yeah.
I agree.
There are many moments where the film subverts typical rom-coms. So, you know, like every film has the fucking makeover scene or whatever. Ugh. And it's like, oh, this is the nerdy girl. And here's the montage or whatever. They didn't even do the montage, which I was like, oh, nice. They didn't even do the montage. And then in the regular movie, it'd be like they take their fucking glasses off and put on a tight dress. And it's like, oh, wow. Va, va, voom or whatever. This main character is like they dress like kind of masculine or whatever. So they do the makeover before the big event. I won't say what the big event is or whatever. It cuts to the scene where they're at the big event and they're still dressed masculine presenting. And it's not like they took their fucking, like their glasses are still on. They didn't like take their hair down or anything like that. And it's not like, oh, here I am in a fucking, in a party dress for no fucking reason.
They just became a like that, sexy mask person.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't even like they didn't become sexy. Like they're still a 17-year-old kid who just like put some effort into their presentation. And like that's what actual life is like.
Yeah, true.
So they also do it. There's like a running scene, like, you know, in rom-coms where it's like, wait, don't go, like that kind of thing. And they run after it. Mm-hmm. I won't say why that happens, but it's subverted.
It's not the same.
I think they do in a really cute way. Yeah. The pacing was really well done. Something that's been bothering me lately because I'm just watching a lot of movies in quarantine. movies be way too fucking long and shows be way too fucking long. And I'm like, you could have just like easily cut a good 20, 30 minutes. Like what were we doing here? But this went by. It didn't feel too long and it also didn't feel rushed. So that was really well done. A couple of other things. Some films, and this might be like a personal choice thing. It doesn't bother me in films, but it's like, you kind of like, you shot yourself in the leg with that. Some people know it as like a trope that specifically happens in Marvel movies. So like a serious moment will happen in a film and then they just be like, oh, well, I just farted. Like, that's not a good thing. But it's just like it cuts the serious moment with something funny instead of letting the serious moment sit and the audience to, like, actually feel those emotions. And this film could have done that. Like, there were parts where I'm like, are they going to undercut this with some bullshit? And they didn't. It's funny, but it lets the serious moments hang. And I really appreciate that. And then last but not least, the writer and director, Alice Wu, is a gay Asian woman. And she's just fucking putting her story on Netflix. And we love to fucking see it.
We do.
Yeah. And it was just a good movie. A good little hour and a half watch. Yeah.
1 to 10. 1 to 10.
Scale of 1 to 10?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have any flaws with that. I gave it a 10.
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't have any flaws with it.
Okay.
There were some things where I'm like, does it always have to be that way? And then it was like, not that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Thank you. All right. I'm gonna watch it because I've been Netflixing myself to death. Thank you so much, Allison Wu.
It's Alice.
Wow. Thank you so much, Alice Wu.
You're just dissing her?
OD, my fault.
Thanks, Alicia Wu.
Angelica Wu.
What's going on in your hood?
So my weekly, well, not weekly, my episodically recurring segment is sex and antidepressants, because I am a highly sexual being who is on antidepressants, anti-anxiety pills, and sleep medications. And a known side effect of these drugs, especially antidepressants, are decreased libido. So in this segment, I document my journey with balancing my sex drive and my medication. I had an epiphany last night, and I said, does everybody go through stages of horniness and not horniness?
Yeah.
So what if I was hypersexual and my medication and my therapy helped me be less hypersexual?
It's a possibility.
And now what I feel is really just what everybody else feels, but I feel anxiety because I never felt it before. So I'm like, what if I'm just average?
I also think there's like no average.
Yeah,
like people experience sexual libido differently.
Yes, but I don't think that, I mean, it could be a side effect, but I don't think that it's like it just doesn't, I felt it as like this negative thing. I've honestly, like, gee shit, like, I've been viewing it as a negative thing. Like, oh, I can't orgasm. I'm only horny sometimes. I haven't masturbated in this long. But it does vary. But for me, literally for my almost entire, well, I started having sex at, like, really having sex at 16. And since then, I've always felt horny. Always. It never stopped. I had to, like, form a bond with God one time to be abstinent until marriage. That lasted all of 2 months. And but that was me, like, going to church, like, trying to pray the sex out of me. But I was, but it was, it didn't, like, change the core of me. Like, I was just an extremely hypersexual person. So with going to therapy and talking about things that have happened to me, being more open with my friends and talking to them about the things, like, being very honest with them, and of course medication, but I just feel like it's not just the medication playing a factor on my libido. I think a lot of it also has to deal with me actually healing from sexual trauma, and in that turning me to be less focused on sex and to be focused on other things, especially, like, I focus a lot more on healing. I focus a lot more on really trying to force myself to leave people who hurt me alone, trying to convince myself that I am worthy of friendships that do not cause me pain, any kind of pain, even if it's pain that they don't mean to give me. If I perceive it as pain, then it is pain, and I shouldn't have to deal with that. That's just something that really came to my mind. Like, I had to ask somebody, like, you have sex, but do you always want to have sex? Do you always want to masturbate? Like, is this, like, a thing that you turn on and off, or is it just a thing that's always on? And he's like, no, it's just, it's like it comes and goes. I feel how I feel. And I just didn't know that people, like, I don't know. I just didn't know that I could feel how I feel. Like, I have sex, and then after I have sex for, like, another week and a half, I just don't want to have sex. And I thought that was so crazy. Like, why don't I want to have sex? Why do I just want to sit and cuddle with this person? Why am I crying because I'm not horny? What the fuck? Like, it was that bad. But now I'm realizing that it's okay to not be horny. Like, it truly is okay. But one thing that the antidepressants are doing, I have my dose raised, because I am still currently dissociating a lot. It is very unsafe. So I had my dosages increase by 2. But I did notice that before, you know, if I did have sex, I began having orgasms, like, regularly. But now, again, I don't have orgasms. But the sex still feels good, and I still want to have it when I want to have it. But I just don't be coming. I'll come eventually, like, on my own. Came, like, 4 days later and shit. But an increase in dose can affect your sexual energy, even if you felt like you had it figured out. So I feel like probably in a month or two, when my body's used to the dose, then it will go back to how it was. Unless it gets raised again or whatever, or unless my medication changes, it's a process. But yeah. I would definitely say lack of libido, because when my old psychiatrist was like, oh, you can't have an orgasm? All right, well, let's see what other medications you could take. I would say she was really serious, so I really thought that
orgasm advocate.
She was with the shit. She's like, oh, when you masturbate, you can't come. And I'm like, girl, I don't even want to masturbate. I don't even want to touch myself. And she's like, oh, we got to get you on some other medication. We'll chat. We'll see what happens in a month. We'll see what happens in 2 months. That was the funniest thing ever. But I would definitely say that if you are on medication, thinking about medication or starting another medication, anything with medication and mental illness, to just really give the shit a chance. And also explore your feelings outside of sex. And see what happens. Because I was just focused on, oh, I'm on these drugs, and now I can't come. But now I'm exploring all these feelings surrounding sex and knowing that the drugs definitely probably had an effect on it. But it's also opening up a new world of healing. And I don't know, I kind of like it now.
It's fucking dope. I think that was the series finale of this segment. Like, I feel like you kind of
made full a big circle. Breakthrough
there. Yeah.
Told you the 200th episode thing, like... I know from even beginning this segment, my outlook on sex, and I admitted it. It was like I had a negative relationship with sex, but now it's becoming more of like, my nigga, A, it's not that serious. Like, it's not that serious. It's never that serious. It shouldn't be serious enough to cause you sadness. Mm-hmm. I mean, it depends on who you are, but... For me, it shouldn't have been serious enough to cause me sadness because there's so much trauma I have with sex. Like, niggas gotta fucking heal from the trauma. You can't heal from the trauma while putting yourself in those traumatic situations. Mm-hmm. Like, if you and sex and rejection are the things that hold you back, you feel like those hold you back, but you keep having sex with people that reject you, then how can you really heal?
Good point.
That's like literally smoking cigarettes, saying that I'm going to quit cigarettes, and all you do is smoke cigarettes. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make a lot of sense. So
that's really cool. I'm really proud of you. Now I'm curious about kind of just want to do a deep dive into how horny people are and when.
Yeah.
Because this whole time, I mean, you've been saying this and you do say that you're hypersexual, but I didn't know that you were like horny all the time.
I used to... Girl, like, I know.
And then, like, why would I know?
Like, yeah, how would you know, right? Remember, I just text you every time I'm horny. But I used to have, like, a lot of, like, flashbacks, like, when I'm in things that I, you know, I need to be focused on. I'm thinking about fucking sex. Or I'm just constantly trying to find a sexual partner. And I don't think that being hypersexual is necessarily, like, the worst thing or a bad thing. I think it depends on how you feel about it. My hypersexuality can put me sometimes in unsafe situations, or it can put me with just really mean people for the sake of just being with a person. I do want to know, though, like, how horny and how often are niggas really horny? So we can have a scale, but I'm sure there's probably like a study like that, like, that just measures sexual feelings. I'm going to find it.
I'm going to make an Instagram poll. You're going to do that very scientific thing. And I'm just going to be like, how horny do you be?
I like yours. We're just going to do yours.
With the little sliding scale thing and the little I'm horny emoji. You know that one? The orange one? Oh, boy. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, definitely. Right into us. How horny are you?
I'm so fucking horny.
Yeah, that's probably going to increase with the fucking social distancing.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into our next segment. It is called Fuck You. It is the last segment of the episode, and it is about your sexual, romantic, and dating lives. If you would like to ask us for some advice, share your hotels, or rant against the white cishet patriarchy, you can send your thoughts to ihupodcast@gmail.com. Please include your pronouns, and because we are in the future, you can also leave us a voicemail. We will play it and respond to it on the show. To do that, you can call us at 404-491-9158. Again, that's 404-491-9158. That number will be in the show notes. And also, I don't answer the phone when you call. It goes straight to
me. No, you're calling Sam's actual phone.
So this letter is from Yaya. I'm unsure of Yaya's pronouns, but the subject is a response to when we ask how are folks virtually dating a few weeks ago. So Yaya writes, my partner and I actually live together, but they had to drive home for a family emergency. So we went from having a lot of support and instantaneous at that to now both assisting chronically sick relatives, and all the anxieties and emotions of the Rona. I mentioned chronic illnesses because none of the illnesses slash emergency is actually COVID-19 related, but impacted nonetheless. Of course. Yeah. I hope everybody's doing okay. And I'm sorry to hear that. And our plethora of mental health issues alone. Wow. That was a long sentence, but it wasn't a Rona. I don't know. I think it kind of was, but that's fine. We are not grammar.
We'll take it.
Not sticklers here. Anyway, it's been hella tough, I'm sure. We've tried to replicate nights on the couch by watching Netflix together separately, but my favorite thing to do so far is to read to my partner on FaceTime. I didn't realize how intimate the practice of reading Black feminist lit to my partner over video chat would be, and how it'd make me feel closer to them than anything else. God, that's sweet as shit.
Yeah, man.
Them falling asleep to the sound of my voice and us sharing in stories of Black love and resistance and being was more home than I've had in a long time. That shit made me want to cry a little bit. Sincerely, Yaya, 24, Harlem, 10 days without my partner, 24 days in quarantine.
Damn, that's the cutest shit I ever fucking heard.
Yeah, that is
so I've never had anybody read to me.
Me, like, not as an adult, no. My parents used to read to me.
Well, that's I feel like it's time for friends to start reading to friends. That shit sounds cute as fuck. What if we have a Zoom chat?
What do you want people to read to you, Rob?
I'd like to also be read some Black feminist literature. I feel like it's a lot of it is so complex that when you're actually reading it, it's hard to visualize it as well. But if you hear it, it's like you take away that one stimuli of processing the words and you get to really like soak it in. So I would love somebody to read me some Alice Walker, like for real.
It just sounds like so intimate. And maybe it's because I'm doing that thing that people tend to do, which is like give a little bit more credibility to TV. I love TV so fucking much. give a little bit more credibility to books over TV as a medium, where it's just like, oh, the page turning and getting intimate with it and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if my brain is doing that, but no, it's not. I mean, probably it still is because that's still ingrained in everybody. But like when you're watching a television show with your partner or whoever you're watching a television show with, the TV is doing it. But when you're reading to someone, like, it's actually like you're actively, like, you're creating.
You're engaged.
Yeah, you're creating this entertainment that you're both going through.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really
cool. You're right.
I don't know what I want read to me, but I would like to read probably like horror to people. And I know that that's very on brand. And I'm always like, oh, let's watch this horror movie together. But I feel like
you're horror ass nigga.
I feel like I could be like very theatrical with it. As opposed to just like I'm reading, I would do like the ooh, and all that kind of goofy shit.
I would love it if you read to me, Sam.
Oh, I'll read to you. Pick a book.
I don't know any horror books, bitch. I don't know who I am.
What is book?
I literally never read. The only horror story I've ever read was Beloved by Toni Morrison.
That was scary enough.
Yeah, it was. That shit still scared me. I was like, what the fuck? So you got to pick a book.
All right, we'll figure it out.
All right. We'll have our own date because we're dating each other.
If anybody at home or wherever you're listening does this, write into us or like let us know what you would like read to you. I'm just curious. This was so fucking cute. Yeah, yeah.
Facts. That was mad cute. And honestly, like, I know y'all love my voice, so like I'll read to you.
Would you do that on OnlyFans?
I would, but I don't have that. My fans aren't a fan of my fucking voice, tell you that much. But I would like to do, like, you know, other non-sexual things, like post my workout videos.
Ooh.
I do. There's a guy who I send like topless workout videos to, but he just loves my muscles. So I'm like, yeah. But I want to post my workout videos and y'all niggas tip me for it. But I would love to go on live and, yeah, read, talk. I just don't have like enough fans to actually go on live with me, because I have been on live, but it would just be me staring at myself. That shit was mad weird. So like, don't think of OnlyFans like just like the sexual platform. It's also kind of just like a Patreon for a person. It's literally Patreon. It's literally not only sexual content. Niggas have all kinds of shit on OnlyFans, and if you like me as a human, subscribe.
That's a Finax. Rob's OnlyFans link will be in the description of this episode. And as we are winding down, I would just like to say, if this episode made you laugh, help you learn something, made you feel good, made you question yourself in a good way, or positively moved you in any sense, please leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, and let everyone you know that you love these hoes. We deeply, deeply appreciate all of you.
If you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so by following us on Inner Whore Uprising without the G on Twitter, Inner Whore Uprising with the G on Instagram, Inner Whore Uprising with the G on Facebook. Forgot about that part. And if you want to join our Facebook community, you could do so by searching Inner Whore Uprising Community. That's CUMUNITY. And you could head to innerwhoreuprising.com to sign up for weekly goodies via our newsletter, Pay a Whore, or check out merch.
Yes, yes. How can people follow you?
You can follow me by going to Instagram. I'm at Pubiscus, PUBISCUS. And I am, who am I on Twitter? That's a good question.
I just changed my Twitter. Them sugar.
That was, it was really good. That was really good.
Oh, thank you.
And I should just change it to that. I am Robbie V Body. R-O-B-B-Y V with two E's Body.
Oh, we got a Twitter change name.
Yeah, I'm trying to escape niggas as a maximum effort to just
change the whole identity and shit.
I'm
SlamRid on Instagram and Twitter, and Carmen San Diego on Instagram for travel and food photos. Peace out.
Oh, and my OnlyFans is onlyfans.com/BBYBOIROB. Baby Boy Rob. Yes.
Sick.
See you, niggas.